It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. For couples with infertility problems, the options for having a family are limited. There are infertility treatments, adoption, and a choice that's becoming more accepted in the United States, surrogacy.
Celebrities like Sarah Jessica Parker, Elton John, and Nicole Kidman have gone the surrogacy route. They all entered into an agreement with women who agreed to carry babies for them.
Leslie Morgan Steiner is with us now. She writes a weekly online column about motherhood for Mommy Tract and Modern Mom. Her new book is called The Baby Chase: How Surrogacy is Transforming the American Family. Leslie, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Surrogacy has been around for a while, not a long while, but it's mainly been in the news due to celebrities. Is there evidence that it's becoming a bigger thing now among non-celebrities?
It is becoming much more mainstream. And actually, surrogacy, in a way, has been around since biblical times, and it's mentioned in the Old Testament over 20 times. But what is happening now is a revolution among surrogacy, because hiring a surrogate or taking a concubine as a second wife to serve as a surrogate always historically involved that woman's egg and her biological and genetic material. But now what is happening due to the rise in availability of IVF is that the egg comes from one donor, the sperm comes from another donor, and the surrogate is not related at all to the baby that she carries.
And talk about the scientific revolution that made that possible.
Well, in vitro fertilization in 1978 in England was really the building block for surrogacy today. The doctors who perfected IVF didn't think of surrogacy, but it caught on very quickly because doctors quite quickly realized in other places that they could take egg and sperm from separate sources and put them in a woman's uterus and that she could carry a baby that was not her baby. And so this is very attractive from the surrogate standpoint because she doesn't feel like she's giving up or selling her own baby. And it's really popular among intended parents too because the legal situation is clarified. It's always their baby. And it always feels like their baby. It doesn't feel for the intended mother that she is taking a baby from somebody else or using a woman for a baby. There's a lot of empowerment and ownership from the intended parent's viewpoint.
That sounds like an ideal view, but yet the surrogate mom has carried a baby to term, and the mom hasn't. Don't some issues rise? Isn't there some discomfort, at least awkwardness?
Yes, and I have to say that I am pro-surrogacy under ideal circumstances, when it is the only solution for a desperate, infertile couple. And so it makes their dreams come true, and the surrogate enters it into it willingly, knowing exactly what she's getting into. And what I've seen in my research is that the reputable clinics in the United States and other countries only hire surrogates who've already had children, who are healthy mentally and physically, and who know what they're getting into. But there definitely are problems in the U.S. and elsewhere. There's fraud among agencies and surrogates because intended parents are desperate and they're very vulnerable because they want babies so badly. There's some bribery and extortion. And also there are some cases where at the last minute the surrogate changes her mind, and then she's in a very difficult legal position because the U.S. courts have upheld that if a surrogate signs a contract to give up her baby, she needs to give it up.
Well, I want to get to the nuts and bolts of how surrogacy works, and I think the great way to do that is to follow a couple you follow through your book, Jerry and Rhonda. Can you introduce them to us and why they pursued the surrogacy path?
Jerry and Rhonda Weil live in Arizona. She is a nurse and he is a firefighter, and they were really appealing for me to profile because they were really open about using a surrogate. And also because they had experienced so many different forms of infertility. Jerry, the husband, had a vasectomy in his 20s, so he needed to get that reversed, which was very expensive but also very successful. And then Rhonda got pregnant right away, but she also miscarried right away. And her doctors discovered after her miscarriage that she has a very rare condition called a didelphous uterus, which essentially means that she has two vaginas and two uteruses. So she can get pregnant easily, but she will always miscarry because her uteruses are neither one of them is big enough to gestate a baby. So surrogacy was a very attractive option to them because they couldn't treat their infertility. and they also couldn't adopt. People often think of adoption as a wonderful solution, as a very selfless, great way to give a needy child a home. But the reality is there are not enough babies for people in the United States who want babies, and adoption has become very expensive, costing in the neighborhood of $60,000 per baby, and it's also very competitive these days. And Rhonda had some mental health issues, and so she would never be at the top of any adoption agency's list. So surrogacy was really the only way they could build a family.
Well, I'll follow their story in a minute, but isn't surrogacy pretty expensive?
It is, and that is the other roadblock that they discovered. They were very excited when they, you know, accepted that surrogacy might be a way for them to build their family. But on a nurse and firefighter's salaries, you can't afford a lot of different options. And surrogacy in the United States currently costs about $100,000 per baby. And almost none of the costs are covered by health insurance. So that just about broke their hearts when they discovered that. But then, being very resourceful, they started thinking of going outside the United States. And they ended up going to India 5 different times. India, a place they had never been before. And they worked with several different surrogates there, and they now have 3 children born via surrogates in Mumbai, India.
So how does one, or two, I guess, arrange to have their baby delivered by a mom in India?
Well, it's such a strange concept, first of all, to hire a surrogate. It really shakes our idea of motherhood profoundly. But then imagine hiring a surrogate 8,000 miles away who doesn't speak your language, who you have very limited contact with. It's you have to have a very open mind and be very trusting. And in my view, work only with a really reputable clinic. And that's what Jerry and Rhonda did. They found an agency called Surrogacy India that's based in Mumbai that is small and very reputable, founded by 2 doctors in Mumbai, India. And you sign a contract. The process is much the same as the United States. You sign a contract. Everything is very above board and transparent. But the thing that is strange is that the surrogate is so very, very far away.
And let's flip it around now to the surrogate side. You're a young woman in India. Why do you go into the job of being a surrogate?
Well, I think the same is true for the surrogates in the United States, too. Part of it is an altruism that you are comfortable with and excited about making another couple's dreams come true of having a baby. But a huge part of it, especially for the women in India, is the financial compensation. Surrogates in India and in the United States are very, very well paid for what they do. And in India in particular, because it's a very paternalistic country and it's a very poor, overpopulated country, women, especially poor women, do not have an ability to work for pay. And the surrogates that I met through Surrogacy India, none of them had ever had a job where they were paid. And this was really their only opportunity, the only way they could make money except for prostitution. And the surrogates that Rhonda and Jerry Weil hired, they ended up working with 2 different surrogates over a 3-year period. And those surrogates were able to use the money that was paid them, in one case to pay for a lifetime of 2 children's education. And in the second case, the surrogate used the money to buy a house for her family. They lived in essentially in a tin shack in a slum in Mumbai, India, and she was able to transform her family with the surrogacy payment. So, again, it's a hard concept to understand, having a baby for somebody else. But in this case, it was, because it's under ideal circumstances, it was very empowering for the surrogates that the Wiles used.
And are they still in touch with the surrogates? Is this a lifelong relationship, or is this a business deal, and soon after it's done, they're not in contact anymore?
In the case of Rhonda and Jerry Weil, they really fell in love with India and their surrogates and the founders of Surrogacy India. So they are still in touch with the surrogates that worked for them and even the surrogates that tried to work for them, but the pregnancy didn't take. But that is very, very unusual. Most people who hire surrogates do not stay in touch with them. And it, especially, I think, for some people, it's actually part of the appeal of using a surrogate in another country is that when you are done with this business transaction, she disappears, and you always feel like you are the real parents, the real mother. There's nobody waiting in the wings. So I think this is another even bizarre idea to grasp, that you could have a child who never meets the person who carried them, who gestated them. But to some people, that is is something that makes surrogacy attractive.
We're talking with Leslie Morgan Steiner. Her new book is The Baby Chase, How Surrogacy is Transforming the American Family.
And we want to hear from you on this. Would you consider surrogacy if you were facing infertility? Did you consider it? Is there anything that concerns you about surrogacy and the financial exchange that goes on? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
We're now talking about how surrogacy has the potential to transform the American family with Leslie Morgan Steiner. She's the author of The Baby Chase.
And we're curious to hear what you think about surrogacy. It's rising in popularity. We've seen some celebrities use surrogacy, like Sarah Jessica Parker. But what do you think about it? If you were facing infertility, would you choose this route? Is there anything that concerns you about this financial transaction that goes on? Do you see it as something that could have the potential to exploit? Or do you think it's the ideal solution for a couple who's facing infertility? Call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go to our callers now. We have Dave on the line in Milwaukee. Dave, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Hey, question for you. I just came on and I just wasn't sure if you dealt with this already, but is the sperm and the egg, is that from the donors or how does that work?
The way that it works with gestational surrogacy is that the egg is not from the woman who is carrying the baby. Mm-hmm. And the sperm could be from a couple of different people. It could be donated sperm that you buy, or it could be from the intended father. It just depends on the parent's particular health issues.
So in the case we were talking about a few minutes ago, that couple, it was Jerry and Rhonda, it was their genetic material here, and then a third party, in this case, a woman
actually,
in India carrying.
That's close.
Oh, okay.
Indian law is that the intended parents must have a biological link to their baby. So either it must be the mother's egg or the father's sperm. In this case, it is Jerry's sperm, but Rhonda's eggs were not good enough to fertilize into an embryo. So Jerry and Rhonda Weil ended up buying eggs from an Indian woman. And their three children, although they were born at different times via different surrogates, are full biological siblings because they were all created with Jerry's sperm and with eggs donated by the same anonymous Indian woman.
Okay, so a lot of wrinkles there. Interesting.
It's complicated.
Definitely. Thanks for the call, Dave, and the question. We'll go now to Tina in Milwaukee. Tina, hi.
Hi there.
So did you have a story to share?
I do. I'm actually a second-time gestational surrogate myself. In fact, last year I delivered twins for a couple who lives in New Jersey, and I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I'd like to just share my thoughts on, for us surrogates, what it means to give this gift. And I'm a mother who's done having children of my own, and I've had friends who had fertility issues, and I felt, how can I help? I love being pregnant. And what can I do to help? And when I found out there was money involved, I'm like, well, that's an additional bonus. I had no idea or no desire to be paid for this. So this is an extra bonus for us. And I'm great friends and have a lasting relationship with both my couples. And it was one of the most amazing things, besides having my own child, that I could ever do.
Now, Tina, as a guy, and I imagine a lot of women might feel this way too, the question, do you feel a sense of loss that you're somehow giving something up after carrying these kids for 9 months?
Not at all. In fact, I felt like the nanny. I was going to love and care for that child until it was back with its parents. The only sadness I may have felt after having the child was that my job was done, and I missed really talking to the intended mother because I really bonded with her over this whole experience. But that was the only sense of sadness, is that I'm done. But again, just my relationship with them formed organically, and we became so close that we talk all the time, and I'm a part of the child's life. I'm Aunt Tina, and it just makes it all a great experience. I'm sure not everybody's can be like that, but it could be, and that's why having really good expectations and knowing your parents so well, it really helps towards the overall experience.
Tina, thank you so much for sharing that experience. Leslie, is that a common story, do you think?
Well, it's wonderful that Tina called in and shared that, because I think it's much more convincing hearing it from a surrogate who's been through this experience than hearing it from a writer like me weighing in. But I will tell you that what she described is exactly what the surrogates who I talked to in the United States said, that they loved being pregnant, they were done having kids, and they wanted to help other families, and the money was wonderful, but it was really a huge bonus. And also, the thing is that they know from the second that they get pregnant that it's not their baby. And so instead of saying over and over again, oh, I'm so excited that I'm pregnant and I'm having a child, they're really excited for the intended parents from the very beginning. And it is a very different experience than being pregnant with your own child. And the focus is on the future family. And also, I think it's important to note that pregnancy is just 9 months of parenthood. And that's what a lot of infertile couples have told me, is that it didn't matter so much how they got to having the baby, because that's just the beginning of parenthood. Parenthood is a lifetime. And I think Tina captured that really well, that she was the temporary caregiver for this baby, but not its mother.
So it's not always a positive experience. You write about Elizabeth Kane, who I understand was the first woman to be a commercial, in effect, surrogate. She now works with the National Coalition Against Surrogacy. What happened?
And there's another very famous surrogate mom from New Jersey, Mary Beth Whitehead, who really turned against surrogacy, too. What happened was they were not gestational surrogates. They were traditional surrogates, and they were impregnated through artificial insemination, and it was their egg, and it felt very much like their baby. And then when they gave the baby up, there was a huge sense of loss. And also, both of those women were surrogates in the early 1980s, when there were no support groups. Surrogacy was a very, very strange concept to most people, and they didn't get any help. There's a lot of counseling that is built into most surrogacy contracts now, and a lot of community support and support from the intended parents and clinics that I think makes the experience much more positive. I am sure, though, that there are some people out there who, once they're into this and they're pregnant as surrogates, they change their minds and it's too late. And that is really is a terrible situation to be in. But I get the feeling that there weren't that many cases like that. Most people are like Tina, that they enter into it as adult women who've been through motherhood, who know what they're getting into, and are doing it willingly and voluntarily and happily.
Back to the phones again. We have Richard with us in Milwaukee. Richard, hi.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much. It's a fascinating topic. And Leslie, I'm curious, because I have not heard it talked about, an issue talked about of what are the potential health hazards for the female surrogate who's carrying DNA material that obviously is not her own? I understand she's the host, but and don't get me wrong, I think this is phenomenal, but I'm very curious about, are there any potential health risks for this surrogate?
That's a great question, and it's one reason why surrogates are so highly paid, because pregnancy itself is extremely risky and very, very taxing on a woman's body. So that risk is there, but that's the same risk that would be there if she were pregnant with her own child. The other risk is that you have to take hormones in order for the embryo to be implanted via IVF in your body. And doctors who have studied this believe that raising your levels of hormones is not unduly risky, but there are still many people who are worried about it over the long term. So more research needs to be done on that. But in terms of carrying a fetus that is not biologically related to you, there is nothing that is dangerous about that, any more dangerous than carrying your own child.
Leslie, just a little time left. Looking into this, do you think we're going to see a lot more surrogacy moving forward?
I think that we are. I think it is going to become a mainstream treatment, and I hope that one day health insurance policies cover it. Infertility is a disease, and it's surprisingly common. It afflicts 10 to 12% of the human population, which is about the same amount of women who get breast cancer at some point in their life. So it's a very common disease that strikes randomly, and doctors consider it to be a treatable disease, and surrogacy should be one of the options. But I do recognize that this is, it's a really hard concept for people to get their heads around, because it shakes our centuries-old definition of pregnancy and parenthood. Most religions oppose it. Many states and countries have banned it. So we have a long way to go before it becomes a fully supported, accepted mainstream treatment in the United States.
Leslie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
That's Leslie Morgan Steiner. She's the editor of the anthology Mommy Wars, and her new book is called The Baby Chase, How Surrogacy is Transforming the American Family.
Coming up next, an update on disaster relief efforts in the Philippines. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.